This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Tune up your fresh air guitar because this is day two of our hard rock and heavy metal series. Our first guest, Robert Plant, almost invented heavy metal singing as the lead singer of Led Zeppelin. Plant also wrote one of the most popular and parodied hard rock ballads, Stairway to Heaven. Led Zeppelin formed in 1968 and broke up in 1980 after the death of drummer John Bonham. Before we hear my 2004 interview with Plant, here he is with Led Zeppelin in 1969. Robert Plant, welcome to Fresh Air. And with Led Zeppelin, you were wailing over some pretty loud music.
Well, that's right. I had to wail. I had no choice, really. The equipment was pretty inferior in those days. And for PAs, the actual public address system at gigs was... I mean, I remember one night in Zeppelin, we played Columbus, Ohio, the university, with, I think, Jose Feliciano. And the PA was actually a cluster of speakers right up in the apex of the room. It was a circular building with the statutory 60s students sitting around, looking suitably astonished or vacant or whatever it was. And the PA was miles up in the air, and there was no chance on earth that the voice could project. Mm-hmm. So I did have to kick in a lot throughout those early days. I think it was not until about 1970 that Led Zeppelin actually purchased a PA, or rather, I purchased the PA because I was a singer. And then I made John Bonham pay some of it because he was the drummer. And we used two overhead microphones, a bass drum and a snare mic. So I said, well, you'd use four times more microphones than I do. As it happened, we reached an amicable solution as far as the cost of things.
How come you still have a voice after singing that loud for so long?
Oh, because it's all about dynamics. And it's also all about, with technique, the last thing in the world that you can do is just blast like crazy. You have to work your way into a tour as you work your way into an evening of singing. You have to take it steady to begin with, make sure that, if you can, that the introduction of the show is kind to you. That wasn't always the case in Led Zepp, but I mean, I've been in dressing rooms with lots of musicians where the singers go into the toilet and start shrieking at the walls of the toilet, and it's very painful to the casual listener and onlooker, but they seem to think that psychologically is the answer, that it'll make them be much more warmed up when they go on stage. But I prefer Neil Young's way of doing it. We stand in a circle, and it's almost like sort of a kind of cosmic barbershop warm-up where you go, and you do that for about half an hour and have a lie down.
Right, so you actually warm up. Okay.
I don't warm up, but he does, and that's a good way of doing it.
Oh, so you admire it, but don't really do it yourself.
I haven't got time. I have a couple of hot cups of coffee or a cup of tea. Keep quiet. Don't talk to anybody. Sit in the dark for 5 minutes and then go.
Well, you know, with Led Zeppelin, you started singing a lot of like blues and rhythm and blues influence mm-hmm. material, like, you know, yeah. Muddy Waters, You Shook Me. Did you feel like you had to change your voice when you started singing music inspired, you know, by rhythm and blues?
Not really, because I'd always been, well, that's not always, but from the age of about 14 and a half, in the town where I lived, there was a very strong, healthy movement towards a kind of subculture, a bohemian culture where there were poetry meetings, there was a lot of post-bebop jazz being played and listened to, and the blues was, strangely enough, almost mainstream in this particular town, thanks to the art colleges and the students in the area. So I was very familiar with blues, with the idiom of singing, and I'd been singing like that for quite a long time, experimenting. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you listen to a lot of the early English and early American white kids who were involved with blues, Mike Bloomfield, Elvin Bishop, you know, I guess Dave Van Ronk, the people who worked in the coffee houses alongside Dylan in the early 60s, everybody, and Dylan as well, I mean, that first album, Down the Highway and See That My Grave Is Kept Clean, there's some great blues there. And everybody developed a style of their own, which was accommodating and natural, I suppose, restrictions and inabilities. So I was wailing all the time, and I'm sure that half the time it was not as good as it could have been. But, you know, it got better.
Well, one of the things Led Zeppelin did was create a really, like, white version of a music that was based in part on African-American blues.
That's right, yeah. And with varying degrees of success, I mean, I think that on Led Zeppelin 1, there was some fantastic... there was I Can't Quit You, Babe, which was written by Willie Dixon, originally performed by Otis Rush, was a great experiment. It allowed the band to perform and for the personality of the band to come through. And at the same time, it did justice to the original recording.
I can't quit you, babe. So I'm gonna put you down for a while. I guess I got to put you down for a while.
My guest is Robert Plant. He was the lead singer of Led Zeppelin, one of the most influential bands in the history of hard rock and heavy metal. When we left off, we were talking about how blues musicians influenced the band. This is Led Zeppelin's recording Whole Lotta Love, which is based on a Willie Dixon song. Led Zeppelin. My guest is singer Robert Plant. Anything you want to say about your singing on that track?
Well, I just, you know, it's a very expressive time. I must say that I always would have liked to have thought that I could create a vocal syncopation and punctuation in as many different ways as possible. My voice is what it is. It's different now to how it was then. But it was punchy and it was joyous. And I guess, you know, my confidence was building by that time. I was 20 years old and I was really trying out all manner of different things. The effects of my childhood and my background, listening to Presley, listening to The Wolf, I tried to put them all into the songs that called for some kind of sexual innuendo or whatever it would be. It was partly blues, partly rock and roll. And it worked.
You were saying that when you started recording, you were shy. And by the time you're in Led Zeppelin, you're singing about, you know, giving her every inch of your love. And so, you know, something had to happen to that shyness on stage. Can you talk about the transformation from, you know, the shy Robert Plant to the much more... go ahead.
There is so much innuendo in the blues, and a lot of English musicians were very fired by Robert Johnson, who, to whom we all owe more or less our very existence, I guess. And the innuendo, whether it would be Terraplane Blues, where he was singing about the parallels between his woman and an automobile, or Traveling Riverside Blues, when he's mentioning the famous Squeeze My Lemon line.
Yes, which you made far more famous, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's all there. It's public domain.
Right, right.
The Lemon Song. It's all about the sort of barrel house, bawdy, juke joint aspects of Saturday night music. So I think I was probably still shy, but I was playing in to character, if you like, with these songs, because it was such, Whole Lot of Love was such a kind of funky, sexy piece of music at the time. It had a fantastic lope to it. And taking the original Willie Dixon lyric, you know, you need cooling, I ain't fooling. I mean, that whole idea, it's not talking about cookery lessons or gardening tips. So the whole thing was based on some kind of sexual innuendo, which I think at the age of 20 was okay.
Can you talk a little bit about creating the visual image to go along with this new Robert Plant that was singing these songs that were laced with sexual innuendo?
No, I don't know how many of those songs particularly were aimed in that sort of freeform fashion, but the image has got very little to do with the lyric. It had just got to do with the times and the whole Renaissance clothing, the whole idea of the beautiful clothes and the stuff, that the entire wardrobe of movie stars deceased ended up on Sunset Boulevard. There were some beautiful clothes to buy, and they just seemed to be absolutely appropriate. We were all very, very skinny kids,
uh-huh.
You know, 160 pounds and not a lot of muscle, just a lot of energy. So there was a look, and that look was kind of universal, really. It didn't have anything to do with the lyrics. I mean, we could just as easily have been a kind of folk band or, right, you know, another Crosby, Stills and Nash, perhaps, and we still would have been dressing the same way.
Listen, I want to play something for you. I know you must be asked everywhere you go about the lyrics to Stairway to Heaven and what they mean and so on and so on. Did you ever hear the Tiny Tim version of it? I know,
yeah.
Everybody has their most, like, bizarre version they want to play for you, but do you know the Tiny Tim version?
I have a copy. In fact, I just chucked it away the other day when I was going through some stuff. I think my favorite version is Little Roger and the Goosebumps.
Oh, who were they?
Well, it was a record that was built around the theme for Gilligan's Isle, the TV program. And our lawyer at the time in New York was absolutely furious that anybody should touch this song, this pinnacle of endeavor and artistic creativity with, you know... And I thought it was that and Hairway to Stephen, which was by Deck Chairs Overboard, I think, an Australian punk band, is pretty good. And the song deserved it.
What do you mean by that, as its author?
Well, I mean, because of the pinnacle of and the beauty of the song, sooner or later that has to turn around and swing the other way, like My Way or God Save the Queen, you know. It gets, after a while, it's a great target for pointing a finger of, a sceptical finger in the hoots of derision, and that's what happens. I think Tiny Tim was perhaps one of the more respectful versions.
Oh, it's a great, it's like the lounge version.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
The swing and lounge version. I'm just going to play a little bit of it for our listeners.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, here it is. It's Tiny Tim with a Brave Combo.
There's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven. And when she gets there, she knows if the stars are closed, with a word she can get what she came for.
Whoa, 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 and she's buying a stairway to heaven.
So, you know, I'll confess to you that it wasn't until I heard Tiny Tim singing the song that I understood exactly what the lyrics were. And, you know, one of the lines is, if there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alarmed now. It's just a sprig leaf from the May Queen.
Spring clean.
Oh, spring clean as in spring cleaning.
Yeah.
Oh. It's such a proper sounding line.
Well, sprig leaf sounds very suggestive. I can't imagine.
Well, but Maclean and hedgerow and bustle and alarmed. It's so.
Yeah. It's onomatopoeic.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm. What was going through your mind when you wrote this?
I was thinking about the need for a sort of more organic relationship between our generation at the time, who were living faster than fast, and our environment and the. Our times were very, I suppose, harum scarum. And Stairway to Heaven developed as a piece of music that one evening with Jimmy and myself, and that kind of tone, that idiom about returning to nature to look for all the signs, to be aware of our environment yet again, I thought it was an appropriate idiom to move into because of the sort of majesty of the chord movement.
Led Zeppelin was one of the bands that kind of created heavy metal. Whether you consider their music heavy metal or not, it certainly led the way for heavy metal. Are there things that you would like to and not like to take credit for in the bands that came after and were inspired in part by Zeppelin?
Well, you know, the inspiration or the lift, if you like, was multifaceted in many respects. So many drummers emulated John. And so many guitarists emulated Jimmy. And I'm sure that John Paul Jones's bass player, being what it was, was studied by bass players everywhere. So on a musical level, it was very flattering, I'm sure, for all the guys to see and to hear the way that people had taken their style and taken it into their own capability one way or another. And you did see a lot of guitarists leaning back. The whole style of presentation was lifted, and that's fine, you know, that's absolutely fine. It's a great compliment, if you like. Also, it is quite simplistic. It's just full force rock and roll with some imaginative writing and some great displays of creativity and power. But the actual taking the music and the songs and then moving them around a little bit, you know, people take a little thread of this, that, and the other for mm-hmm. their own benefit all through time. Now, I don't know too much about any of that, and I don't have an opinion one way or another because I think that the popular music as a mainstay of sort of pop culture is rather like a kind of thieving magpie. You know, the nuances of Led Zepp that they couldn't touch were the beautiful parts that were just unattainable, I guess.
Robert Plant recorded in 2004. Guess what his forthcoming CD is? A collaboration with bluegrass country singer Alison Krauss.